call Senate Hess to order. It's about 1:33 on the 5th. From the Hess Committee, we have Senators Elton, Olson, myself, Dyson, and we have with us the Committee on Regional Affairs and its Chair, Senator Stedman. Would you like to introduce your...
Yep, and with, or from the Committee on Regional Affairs, we have Senator Gary Stevens, myself, Senator Stedman.
And in the audience is Representative Wilson. All right. So it's our pleasure to hear a presentation from Pamela Slutz, who is the Ambassador of Mongolia. She's previously been an ambassador, the Director of the American Institute in Taiwan, served as Chief of Political Section in Jakarta, and Director of the Office of Regional Security Policy, Bureau of East Asian and Pacific Affairs, and Deputy Director of the Office of Chinese and Mongolian Affairs. Earlier, she'd served in Shanghai, Jakarta, Kinshasa, and with the Bureau of Political and Military Affairs, and a member of the U.S. delegation to the nuclear and space talks, the USSR, in 87-89. Graduate of Hollins University and the University of Hawaii East-West Center. Welcome, and we're eager to hear from you. And you want to introduce your bodyguards?
Thank you very much. Good. This is hard for me to stand here.
We prefer you to come and sit where the mics are, and we can catch.
The only time I've had to testify is when I was confirmed. Thank you very much. It's a great honor for me to be here today. I'd like to introduce Lieutenant Colonel Mark Bohr, who's the coordinator for the Alaska National Guard Mongolia State Partnership Program, which is essentially what brings me here. I represent the American people in Mongolia. I've been there for about 2.5 years. I'm a career foreign service officer, as you've noted in my career, but I have focused on Mongolia for a good number of years, and for good reason. Mongolia is probably the only functioning democracy in that part of the world. If you know where Mongolia is, it has Russia on the north and China on the south. But Mongolia has been a good friend of ours. It's now what we call a comprehensive partner. President Bush visited Mongolia last year, first American president to ever visit Mongolia. Before that, we had Speaker Hastert, first American Speaker of the House to visit Mongolia. So it's been a record year for us. Mongolia is a democratic country. It threw off the communist yoke, if you will, in the early 90s. It's market-oriented, beginning to privatize its economy, and that's where I wanted to pursue possible future relationships, particularly in the economic area with Mongolia. I think last but not least, Mongolia also has peacekeepers on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're one of the original members of the coalition, and they continue to maintain a presence in Iraq. Lieutenant Colonel Bohr has been the I'll let him explain the Alaska part of this, but again, on behalf of the U.S. government and the embassy, I can't really speak for the Mongolian government, although my counterpart, Ambassador Bold, the Mongolian ambassador to the United States, will actually be in Alaska later this month. I'll let him speak for Mongolia, but I'm here to raise the profile of Mongolia and the interests of the American people.
We've been joined by Senator Green.
Thank you, sir. The Alaska-Mongolia partnership began 2 years ago, about 2.5 years ago in September 2003, and I had the distinct honor of helping initiate that partnership for General Campbell, the Commissioner of DMVA. And over the last 2.5 years, we've engaged across the spectrum militarily with the Mongolians, everything from public affairs to medical exchange events and other non-combat type information exchanges. That relationship now on the military side is very mature. We enjoy a very good relationship with our Mongolian military brothers. We're looking to expand that relationship beyond our military, which is in keeping with the life cycle of the State Partnership Program, a program that was developed back in the early 90s when the Soviet Union broke apart and the independent countries within that union started down the road towards democracy. The life cycle says that once your military is engaged, then you can start bringing in civilian entities and expand the relationship, and that's the point we're at today. We've been looking at cultural exchanges, we've been looking at some educational exchanges and other things that the Mongolians ask us, and currently the Mongolians are asking for everything from English language training to bringing students to America to participate in our universities and colleges. This past week we've been through Fairbanks, through Anchorage, and now down to Juneau, talking with just about everybody that we can get in the door, especially with the university system, to talk about the opportunities that might be there for the Mongolians. Probably the question that's in your mind right now is, that's great for the Mongolians, what's in it for Alaska? And what we see is the possibility for increased trade. We see the possibility for educational exchanges, sending our students on short-term and even long-term exchange programs over into Mongolia, and possibly some exchanges for their professors as well. But we think this is a very strong relationship. We enjoy the support of our commissioner and others that have been over to the country and seen it, and the Mongolians certainly enjoy our cooperation and participation. Thank you, sir.
Who has supplied their military hardware?
Those are programs outside of the state partnership. Those federal government has programs in their foreign military sales that are administered by the Department of Security Cooperation.
It's the Department of Defense.
Department of Defense.
Several programs. We don't actually provide Mongolia much in the way of hard equipment. They have asked us to train them as peacekeepers so that they can do UN missions. They're a very small country, and they don't pretend to be able to defend themselves against their neighbors, nor do they want to try and antagonize them. So with our assistance, mostly in the form of training and personal equipment, we've helped them become a UN-qualified peacekeeping support unit. They currently have peacekeepers not only in Iraq and Afghanistan, but also Sierra Leone. This is a high priority for our government, for the federal government, trying to encourage other countries to take on these peace support operations. But we don't provide them with tanks or airplanes. What they have in their inventory is basically Russian. We provide them a lot of training. About 350 members of their armed forces have studied in the United States under the International Military Education and Training Program. But essentially, their entire officer corps is American-educated, and large number of them speak English. And we're engaging now in a program to reform their military, particularly focusing at developing an NCO, a non-commissioned officer corps, which is something that they didn't inherit from the Russians. On the economic side, we have a very active Agency for International Development program. We're focused on rural development. Mongolia's economy is based on mining, which is fairly new. And also livestock, meat, whether it's camels, goats, they have Kashmir, of course, a lot of sheep, and sort of a New Zealand in Asia there. So those are the pillars of their economy. We also have Peace Corps there. We have 120 Peace Corps volunteers serving in Mongolia in some of the most remote parts of the country, teaching English by and large. Last year, the Mongolians declared English to be their second national language. And they've asked us to come in, and this is where I've been talking to some of the university people here, if there's any way we can help them reform their curriculum, their methodology, so that they can learn English a lot faster than they are now. And it's also, I might add, a society, the demographics, about half the population's under the age of 20. So that's our target audience, is these young people. And we're competing with the Russians and the Chinese for, if you will, their hearts and minds. And the Mongolians would rather study in the United States or at least be our allies than allies with their immediate neighbors. So I see an opportunity here really in the educational field if we can get more students. I met one Mongolian student at the University of Alaska in Anchorage. I think she's probably the only one. At least she didn't know of any others. And she's in the nursing school there and quite happy. But I think there's a lot of opportunity. Mongolia, just if I could back up a minute, Mongolia is about the size of Alaska, but 2.5 million people. But still, they have the same sort of climatic and topographical challenges that you have here.
What What kind of things can Alaska trade with Mongolia besides people and education?
From Alaska to Mongolia?
But both ways.
Both ways. I think what Mongolia is looking to do is not so much export to the United States. They want a free trade agreement with us, largely for textiles and apparel, which is controversial and not likely to happen. We haven't agreed to a free trade agreement. But I think their market will be China. And what I'm encouraging American companies and others is to help Mongolia develop its industry or its niche market, its niche products, so that it can actually sell to China. I'm not sure there'd be, I see an advantage for American companies doing business in Mongolia, making a profit that way, but the market would probably be China.
Questions, Senator Wagner, and then
I was in China last fall. We didn't get a chance to go to Mongolia or anything. But the thing I noticed about China, and I want you to relate this kind of to Mongolia, they never allowed us into the rural area. We were not allowed to see what the rural areas are like. They kept us only in the larger, more metropolitan cities, Beijing and Shanghai. So we know from what we read and what we hear from certain groups that provide services in the rural area, it's still pretty primitive, and the people are pretty downtrodden. Is that the same way in Mongolia, or are they more, is their government structure any different?
Government's very different. I'm free to travel. As I say, we've got Peace Corps volunteers all over the country. It's wide open. They have a parliamentary democracy. They've had free and fair elections, peaceful transfer of government between parties. What's happening in the rural areas is you have poverty, and you still have a lot of very isolated communities, but they're open. It's not restricted in any way by the central government. So quite a contrast from China.
Okay. Senator Alton, and we've been joined by Senator Green.
Thanks, Ambassador and Colonel. I'm interested in two areas, and one's health, the other's science. And on the health side, avian flu, and on the science side, global warming issues. Are there programs that Alaska may be able to help with or participate in on both of those issues?
That's a good suggestion. Last year, we did find, or Mongolia found, avian flu in some of their migratory birds, I think some species of swans and geese. So they are on the State Department's watch list as a potential avian flu, at least incubator, if you will. Through our aid program, we've been working with the public health system in Mongolia, but it really is just a drop in the bucket. And there's a limit to what we can do through our aid program. So, yes, any and all sort of assistance. I don't know if it would be possible to do a public health sort of program. The Mongolians are really desperate for assistance, and at least defining how they go about tackling this. The Alaska National Guard's been involved in several disaster mitigation and emergency preparedness, and that also is the same agency as handling the avian flu.
If I might, ma'am, one of the benefits we have with Commissioner Campbell, not just being in charge of our military, but also overseeing our emergency management system here in the state, is that the Mongolians have recognized that and have asked for engagement there as well. And so we've started to branch out with our emergency management folks and our homeland security folks. Just recently we came back from Mongolia, and while we were there, we discussed with their National Emergency Management Agency head engaging. They do have a concern on the avian flu, and so we're looking at ways that we can exchange information.
Okay. Just to add on the global warming side, I mean, people at the University of Alaska, especially University of Alaska Fairbanks, are becoming very engaged in.
That would be. In fact, I talked to some of the people in Fairbanks. Mongolia is facing, well, they call it desertification. The Gobi Desert is getting bigger and bigger. They don't know if it's a cyclical weather pattern, but they've had drought for about the last 6 or 7 years. The aquifers are sinking. There's a significant amount of overgrazing as well, but the permafrost is also melting. It's deeper and deeper. We have had several, I forget which university, an American University consortium that's been out doing some research on the permafrost and trying to track the temperature changes. But I think that would certainly in the research area be a very collaborative effort there. There's a lot of similarities.
We have the same permafrost issues.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
If I could go back to, I mentioned what Mongolia probably needs. We have American companies invested in Mongolia right now, primarily in the services sector. Americans own two banks. They own an investment company and several tourist companies. We're also Caterpillar is a very large supplier of heavy machinery. But there's, I think, a market for more information management systems. Mongolia's entering or has entered the internet age. Cell phones are quite popular, but sort of information technology. And the other area would be environmental technology. They have mining, but they don't really haven't focused on how you do it cleanly and how you clean up afterwards. They also have serious problems in the urban areas with water treatment and air pollution. So things in, I know Alaska, you've tackled those problems and environmental technology and clean living. I think Mongolia could certainly benefit. And it would be in terms of investment or sales of, not just investment, but sales of American goods and services.
Other questions for Ambassador? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Remind me, because I seem to have forgotten, but there was Inner Mongolia and Outer Mongolia, and what are the borders, and what does that mean as far as geopolitical problems and, I guess, the economy that's important?
Mongolia, in fact, this year they're celebrating the 800th anniversary of the founding of the Mongol state. What they're celebrating this year is a day in 1206 when Genghis Khan was crowned the king of all the united Mongol tribes. That was the first time. That didn't exist, that didn't last much beyond the 17th century. But that was before he began his conquest of the rest of the world. That's what they're celebrating. Mongolians are basically going back and trying to reclaim their roots and their identity through that. Modern Mongolia is what used to be called Outer Mongolia. It declared its independence from Qing dynasty, the Manchu dynasty in China in the dynasty ended in 1911. There was some civil war, and then Mongolia declared its independence from China in 1921. And that's their national day in July. They celebrate that. So they've been an independent country since 1921. But during the period of the Sino-Soviet dispute, Mongolia sided with the Soviets. So the Soviets actually had troops, about 100,000, deployed in Mongolia and their ally, Mongolia. And for all intents and purposes, it was independent but a satellite of the Soviet Union. Mongolia went through a glasnost, perestroika, as did the Soviet Union. And by 1992, all the Russians had left. And Mongolia drafted and passed a new constitution, which we helped write. And they've been off and running on that path. Within China, there is a province called Inner Mongolia. But it's for right now, they don't even call it Republic of Mongolia, it's just Mongolia. It's an independent country, and then Inner Mongolia is a province of China.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And the Mongolians don't regard, there are Mongolians, or at least Mongols, living in China, but they're not regarded as Mongolian, they're regarded as Chinese. For all intents and purposes, they've been sinicized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is the country Muslim?
No, it's Tibetan Buddhist.
That's right.
It's, again, Mongolia's have an interesting getting back to the geostrategic, they have one foot in East Asia. They prefer to be associated with the Koreans. I mean, they tolerate the Russians, and they really hate the Chinese, really. And they want to distinguish themselves in every way possible from China. They claim an ethnic, linguistic, cultural connection to the Koreans, and it's reciprocated. I think the Koreans feel that somewhere back in the past, they actually might have been one of the same peoples. So that's their sort of immediate geostrategic. They also have one foot in Europe. They were an associate of the Warsaw Pact. And at the time, they were matched with East Germany. So we have quite a few Germans in Mongolia. But they have very little contact with Central Asia, because those were Muslim countries, and they were part of the Soviet Union. They were never independent. Mongolia distinguishes itself from that. But it's a very unique country with a unique language. It's not spoken anywhere else. Very difficult language. We see Mongolia not so much as a strategic base, but rather as a democratic base. We often cite Mongolia as an example of a successful democracy and a post-communist transformation. There are very few other countries I can name in the region, Central Asia or East Asia, that have done what they've been able to do. So we like to think of them as our sort of our friendly base in Northeast Asia.
What can we do to help?
Well, I'd like to invite more people to come to Mongolia, look it over, see what possibilities there might be. And maybe encourage more Mongolians to come here. One thing we've been discussing is the possibility of a sister city relationship between a Mongolian city and somewhere. Fairbanks seems to be one of the candidates anyway that might be appropriate. And start a formal relationship at that level.
What's the latitudes?
It's not as far north. Ulaanbaatar, the capital, is actually about 47 minutes degrees north. So most of the country is below the 48th parallel. But because of its geographical situation, it's got that continental climate, which is quite cold.
Senator Wagner.
Are there service clubs there, such as Rotary? And
Rotary is there. We have 8 Rotary clubs. There's something akin to a junior league, and Lions isn't there yet, but we have about 600 Americans in Mongolia. A fair number of them actually are missionaries, and they have brought in through their own connections a lot of social groups and activities as well. One of the areas we've been working together is alcoholism is a big problem in Mongolia, particularly among the high school, the boys, high school age boys, young men. So I've been doing a lot of youth and community development type of things. I'm a member of one of the Rotary clubs, and one of our projects is actually to develop extracurricular activities for teenagers after school so they don't go haunt the local bar or electronic games.
Similar problems.
Yes, it's primarily a nomadic society that's becoming urbanized. Tremendous unemployment rate. The economy, as I say, is based on livestock herding, very little industry. And so when these young people move into the cities, they don't have much to turn to.
The next order of business for us today is to consider a resolution that encourages that Taiwan be an observer at the World Health Assembly. Is that a good idea? I see you served in Taiwan for quite a while.
Yes,
you'd like
it
to
is.
Testify on Representative Wilson's bill?
Well, I'll say a few words based on what I believe U.S. policy is. It's every year in May, the World Health Assembly considers this issue. And for the past several years, the United States government has supported observership, not membership, but observership in the World Health Assembly for Taiwan. We think they have a lot to contribute to it.
All right. Senator Stedman.
I think that concludes the joint session. Are you moving on to the rest of your agenda?
Just about to. Do you have any questions for our ambassador? Anybody else? Any other comments? Thank you very much for what you're doing, and you too, Colonel. Do you want to introduce your sidekick, Major Wilson?
Yes, sir, if I might. This summer, I'll be leaving my position as coordinator and heading off to Rhode Island to attend the Naval War College. So just recently, we selected Major Steve Wilson to replace me as the coordinator, and he's been shadowing me through a few events, doing his on-the-job training, and he'll take over officially on June 1st.
All right. Well, look forward to seeing you, more of you. Thank you very much, all of you, all three of you, for your service to our country and the world.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Well, take a brief at ease.
Sorry.
We're adjourning to joint session.
This concludes CNRA meeting, and there's nothing further on the agenda. See you in January.